the Pharisees came to Jesus and said, when is the kingdom coming? He said, the kingdom's not going to be visible. And then he said, and finally, you should know that the kingdom of God is among you. There's two translations you can give. It's either among you or in within you. They're both legitimate translations, but in the Gospel of Luke, it's pretty clear that Jesus would have been talking about relationships with others. So it's not so much, which the thing that would be much more comfortable for me, personally, is the kingdom of God is within you. So you can close yourself in, and everybody else can go to hell in a handbasket. But if we translate the little preposition en, as among, then it becomes work. The kingdom of God is among you. Think of it this way. The kingdom of God exists in the space between you and me. The kingdom of God exists in the space between you and me, and it's up to us as individuals to decide, well, what's going to characterize that space? Am I going to fill that space with this, you know, with this troublesome sophomore? Am I going to fill the space between us with anger and impatience? Or am I going to fill that space with concern and love and sensitivity? How am I going to fill the space between me and my brother monk? What's going to characterize the nature of that space? The kingdom of God is among us. The kingdom of God is the in-between us. One way of saying the kingdom of God is it's Jesus teaching us a whole new way of relating to God, a whole new way of relating to one another. New way of relating to God, not so much as that God of Sinai who hurls thunderbolts like Jupiter, but the God who's willing to wash our feet, the God who died for us on the cross. A new way of relating to one another. Not through power, but through love. So the kingdom of God exists in the spaces between us. So then on Tuesday night, we were given away a real good challenge when we see our country divided up into red states, blue states, the men and the women, the whites and the blacks and the Hispanics, the college educated, non-college educated, all these spaces between us. Now it's up to us, and well, okay, we see those differences. What will characterize the space between, let's say, me and some steel worker in Gary, Indiana, who's been out of work for 11 years? You know, what's going to characterize the space between me and him? What will be the character of the space between me and a racist, between me and a Mexican immigrant? What's going to characterize those spaces? That will determine, among other things, whether the kingdom of God is closer to be realized or not. And will also say something about me, right? Doesn't Jesus say, whatsoever you do to the least of my brothers, you do to me? So I'm going to close my comments in a second with that. I was reflecting on that passage earlier in the week. We sang it at Mass, not today, earlier, maybe it was even yesterday, Father Luke was singing the inclusive translation, whatsoever you do to the least of my people. But when I was reading it in the morning, I read the translation, whatever you do to the least of my brothers, and all of a sudden it struck me. You know how you read something your whole life, and then that particular day, the word brother. Jesus is saying, you're messing with my brother. I didn't know he was your brother. Oh my God. it's different from saying, whatsoever you do to the least of my people, my peeps, you know, oh, that's my brother. And so the next time I'm about to smack somebody, I say, well, this is Jesus' brother. Do I really want to do this? And also, isn't he making himself my brother, too? You know, he's making me his brother. How am I going to act as his brother? in my family growing up, my dad was a lawyer and a city councilman in East Orange, and we were told we had to act a certain way. You know, because people know who you are, know your family name. That's not such a bad thing to keep yourself in line, you know, keep your kids in line. In the family name is at stake. You're Jesus' brother. You're part of the family. How do you act? So anyway, the chair would be interested in entertaining any reactions and thoughts about what you saw happen for us, to us, and with us as a country in the past several days, or not, or we can sit in solemn silence.
I pray that that new guy we saw early Wednesday morning, his name is Donald Trump, never seen him before, is the real Donald Trump. Because it almost seems like the last couple of days he's having somewhat of a, change in heart.
Why not?
About bottom line comes down to me, now this is the thing I've always learned. If you hear a rumor, don't pass it on based upon whether it's true or not. Pass it on whether it's a good one or not. You know, it might come true. And you know, the bottom line is, I don't know what else we can do as Christians is other than hope for the best. Because if we don't, it was fairly obvious from what Father said about the red states and the blue states. This is one of the closest elections, and I think that this is a lot of, there's some very strong divides there that need to be bridged. And I think, you know, prayer is good. Abbott Belden was talking about prayer. But also anytime you can do something to smooth things up, it's not a bad plan.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at the hate, because like on Facebook you read a lot of stuff. And like growing up, you know, like it used to be, this is like a long time ago, like my father was in a union, so union people tended to vote Democrat. And we used, at that time, a long time ago, we thought of like the Republicans were like the rich people. You know, that's what it was back in the 60s and 70s. And I mean, I don't remember everyone being so angry. It just shows there are so many divisions, because you thought one way, I thought this way. But now it's like, if you don't believe what I believe, you know, you've seen it now. People who voted for Trump were beat up, and this one, you know, it's just scary. I think it's really scary. And I think it's like what you just said, the space between us, whose voice are going to be heard. And I think this election was, a lot of people feel for years in this country, what they need isn't really important anymore. And I think whoever got in, I don't know if it really changes the outcome, but I think it was about, you haven't heard me in rural America, or you haven't heard me as a woman or whatever. And it's just how we perceive that is different, like how I look at it versus how you look at it. But I think a lot of people are just feeling left out in this country. Yeah.
Frustrated is another good word.
I think anger, you know, you have to go back. I mean, it's kids growing up with both parents working and the whole family structure being gone. And you know, all of society over these past 50 years has changed so much. You know, the one thing I'm actually, maybe, I don't know, grateful for or hoping for is that I was really scared that if a Democratic person got in, that it would really, really take away a lot of religious freedom, religious rights. You know, I feel maybe that has more of a chance now. Maybe Right to Life has more of a chance now. So there's pros and cons for everything. Hopefully we have a Supreme Court that will be appointed where it will look at everyone's religious freedom, and not just, you know, it seemed like the minority now were getting their freedoms, and you know, what happens to the other people? What happens to this girl that wants to go into a bathroom in a school and she doesn't know who's going to be in there because now everybody can go in anybody's bathroom. So I feel saddened that there's so much hatred, but I think we've caused that hatred because our priorities have been materialism, and I don't think it's been nurturing of children the way it used to be. And so we've kind of put ourselves in this mess, and I see positive things from it as well.
We have to see positive things from it. You, I guess both of you the same. What else are you going to do? The guy's our president. And so that's the way I was brought up. It's a democracy.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He's
the
president. Father Linus from Nigeria, we would laugh each time there was a new president. You know, I'd say, oh, all right. It's just like in Nigeria, the new president comes and congratulates, or the old president comes and congratulations, here's the presidential palace, and you know. As opposed to sending a hit squad to kill him. For us, the peaceful passing of power from one to the next is the way it's supposed to work. And so for me to say, I don't accept this, it's not the way it works here.
I think we've bridged the fear, because I think there's so much fear on every side right now.
So I'll just point. I know that a couple of my Mexican students are very afraid, because the man could come in any day and ship off both his parents. So that's what he's afraid of. What are the people on Fifth Avenue afraid of?
I think of the protesters, that some of the millennial protesters will get out of hand and cause civil unrest and start more rioting. I think that's a fear, and how that could cramp his presidency. And other than that, I think I should speak for most people. I think businesses are pretty happy right now. Many businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although if you've got all your stuff abroad someplace and all your investments are over there as a multinational, now you're going to be afraid too, don't you?
Yeah, but if we lower the corporate tax rate and we don't punish people for repatriating the money, then I think it's going to be a good move for the multinationals. But yeah, I see what you're saying, because of foreign exchange and all that. But the fear question, I think it is still.
So it's this whole melange here of anger, frustration, fear, resentment. It's a nice mix. Alice?
One of the programs I saw on TV was a group of people that they had gathered for their opinions, and then this person who was running the group made some comments afterwards. And one of the comments he made was that never before, when they had a group like this gathered, did everybody talk over everyone else's speech.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Everybody was talking at the same time. Nobody listened to anyone else.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think that's so true today. Nobody listens to what you're saying.
Right.
I get these phone calls and they're talking so fast, I don't know what they're saying. I hang up. Nobody's listening to their brothers or sisters.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting comment for him to make. He made other comments either, I can't remember what they were, but that was the one that really stood out to me. And you saw it in the group. They all talked at the same time.
Are you finished talking?
I'm
finished.
Talk.
I think that some of that, or a lot of that, has to do with the cultivation of the me generation. That's all about me, even to the point of the kingdom of God is in you. Yeah, right. See? Yeah. So the kingdom of God is in me, that I'm going to talk out loud over you. But subscriptions to Self magazine. Mm-hmm. Gone through the roof. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so if that's it, if it's all about me, special orders don't upset us, Delta is ready when you are, we do it all for you, you buy your little daughter a little cute top that says princess on it, well, yeah, we're setting ourselves up, are we not, for people who don't want to listen to the space between, what characterizes the space between us? Well, I just have to fill that and overpower.
Yeah, and we can educate ourselves better too, because there's such a real lack of understanding. Like if you compare to people's viewpoints in New York City versus upstate New York versus, you know, somewhere in Indiana, it's like we're in different, just totally different frames of mind. And I think a lot of people, you know, I work in the media, and I think a lot of us, like, wow, we really miss this, and we had no idea that this was the situation of some people in Indiana and what was going on. And and then other people have made the point, well, a lot of the way people in New York City are feeling is the way that some people in Indiana felt when Obama got elected. So that, you know, we're calling, you know, some people in New York City, oh, this is like 9/11. Well, that was like 9/11 to them. So it's just so interesting how there's just so many different viewpoints that, to Allison's point, we just really haven't listened or haven't even, it's that confirmation bias. We keep looking for evidence of what we believe is true amongst people who think like us, and I think we need to stop doing that. But
yes,
I don't know how.
Someone suggested that one of the side effects, or maybe one of the direct effects of social media thing and the multiplication of things like cable TV channels and Sirius radio and stuff, you can just choose. So the special radio station done just, like, you know, just for angry Democrats between the ages of 35 and
37.
And so that's what I'm going to listen to.
Right.
That reminds me of a trip I took with a friend a couple years ago, and she was totally into Sean Hannity. And some of what Sean Hannity says is okay, but I mean, it was like, I said, I have to change the station, because, you know, I said, I don't agree with everything he's saying. I see why you like him, but it's almost like what you're saying. It's like you get indoctrinated to a certain viewpoint and you can't see anything.
Right, and the media often are all of the same background too.
Yeah.
So it's like we report on the people like
right.
I don't know how to fix it.
No, I just want to say, I may live in fantasy land, but there was a letter, maybe you've heard about it, a fourth grader wrote a letter. She's Islamic from the Midwest. And the letter goes to this: Dear Donald Trump, I know you're an important man in the country, and I'm being picked on at my school because of the religion I belong to, which is Muslim. She says, I wondered if there's anything, if you become president, that you might be able to do about this. And if I was Donald Trump, and I heard about this, and I can't believe he hasn't heard about it, I would, see, I live in fantasy land. I would arrange, after I'm inaugurated, we're going to make a trip out there. I'm going to say, I got this nice letter from a friend of mine, from this little girl. She's your classmate, and she's really special. And I want to tell her how important it is that we respect each other's differences. Yeah, I know I'm living in fantasy land, but just from a political point of view, it would make a lot of sense, but it would do something to heal us a little bit.
He'll mellow, though. I mean, already he's appointed Pence to do his transition team, you know, because Pence knows Washington and knows the in and outs and things. I think, I mean, although he said atrocious things, but I think a lot of it was also showmanship, you know. And I just think when it really comes down to it, he's going to really tone down and... you know, but Pence is a pretty solid guy. I think he's a pretty solid guy, and he even took it away from Christie because, you know, Christie's got some stuff around him now. So, you know, they wanted someone who was going to really know Washington and do a good job with it. So I think that's a good sign right there.
I've been hearing also that the real rabid Trump supporters. I mean, talk to them now, they say, well, you don't really think he's going to do any of that stuff, do you?
Yeah, right, no.
He's not going to build a wall, or he's not going to, you know, make this law wiping out everyone.
Right.
That's what kind of thing.
You don't really think
so. He said that because he wants to get people on his side.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
And the point is that from hearing at least a few people, I mean, not a sample of the whole nation, but saying, well, yeah, of course that's what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to do that. I wouldn't have voted for him if I thought he was going to do that.
I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop and him to go on a Twitter tirade, I have to say.
Yeah, he almost started.
He's been very restrained.
He started one the other day.
I'm praying for
it. It was 16 months he was keeping up a facade if he wasn't a facade. I don't know.
Should we do a little psychoanalysis?
The long distance psychoanalysis.
The suggestion that he was putting on an act about being sexist, racist, and every other issue he got. And then now we're going to see the real Donald Trump. Or just allow the person to have a, you know, he woke up one morning and said, oh my God, I'm the president. Now what do I do? How do you do this? You know?
I don't think he really wants the job.
I don't think he even thought he would.
But get myself
I do. You can tell us who's high.
When you saw him with Obama afterwards, the only way I could describe him is he showed me all the conflict points. I saw everything. I saw the downstairs shelter. Yeah. I saw everything. Oh, I'm way at over. How many times can I come back here and ask for help?
And I think maybe part of the appall with him also is that he kind of aired our dirty laundry. I mean, obviously, we're not all bigots and we're not all sexist and all these things, but he said all the things that some people believe, and we always kind of pulled ourselves out to, like, we're not like that, that's not us. And he kind of legitimized that, well, maybe half of us are like that, and that doesn't make us look good, and we're embarrassed by it.
I heard a gal on Fifth Avenue being interviewed, a woman who lives a block or so away from Trump Tower, and NPR was interviewing her, trying to get people, you know, to get to say things. Well, is this inconvenience? So how do you and your neighbors feel about this? And she said, well, it's fine by me. He said, the world needs to see that not everybody approves of what Mr. Trump has been saying for the past 11 months. So I don't mind if we have to put up with a little noise and traffic for a while. That's fine, because people need to know that not everybody agrees with the guy. And here we are, optimists and that we are, you know, and believing in a good God, saying, hey, the guy can change. And wouldn't it be wonderful, the power of prayer, that we just have a prayer crusade, and that the Lord would actually change the man's heart? Wow.
How you want to do all the hate? Like, I think a big concern for the left is that so much of the hate that's been spewed already, how do you undo that? And then, you know, if you see online all the sort of the hate, I don't want to say hate crimes yet, well, some of them has been assault, but like the letters on, you know, gay people's cars, or the, you know, the insults to black people or women, how do you stop those people from being further inflamed and further empowered? And I don't think that's representative of all the Trump followers at all, but I think they're in every party there's extremes, and how do you rein in those extreme people who are probably making the rest of the Trump people look bad?
Yeah, one of the things, when I teach logic and rhetoric, one of the great rhetorical devices is stirring up popular passions. In this particular group of people, I know right where they live, and I'm going to say, international trade treaties. Everybody goes crazy. Yeah. And then these people, well, they're racist. So I'm going to flame racism there. And then I go to the next town, but how do you put that genie back in the bottle? Right? This is, I think, what you're saying. And all of a sudden you realize, yeah, there are a lot of haters, you know, whatever kind of haters there are. You know? And now you can get on Twitter, and everybody in the whole world gets to see that you're a hater. It used to be you would just sit in your living room and drink beer and hit your kids or something. Now you can get your own little world.
Everybody knows.
And everybody says, oh, everybody is hating you. Everybody is doing this.
One of the things that really disturbed me, though, was that if you saw this election through a child's eyes, a girl between, say, the age of 10 and 16, and you're coming to be a woman, you know, all the body changes you go through. And, you know, that part really bothered me because, like, you know, our culture just seems so toxic. I mean, the messages about, you know, all the comments made about women's bodies, and, you know, and there's a lot of people like that in the world like this, but it just, I never saw it so much, you know, and part of it's the media that, you know, I just think if you were that age, what do you think of yourself as growing into a woman? That you're a piece of meat? I hate to say it, but I think it's been disturbing to a lot of women. You know, if you're older, you can kind of be like, all right, you know, you have a different perspective, but you're coming into that age. I mean, it's like women are like, his things he said,
fathers and mothers have an important job to do. I know that my kids, the parents were helping them with that.
Yeah. So,
well, my mother told me, you know, the next morning, Alice, you had a comment.
You know, one of the comedians did a sketch on the TV, and it was interviewing God, because God was running for president. And he said to him, why do you want to be president? He said, well, every time they talk, this one talks and that one talks. They say, God, help us, God, help us. That's why he was running for president. So I think prayer is the thing to do.
There's some people say this is a real blow to Christianity, though, because of his the identification of the evangelicals, especially, and how they're so connected to Pence and support of Trump, that this makes people who just have, who aren't Christian, or like the, all the sort of the, what's the word, undecideds or what have you called, who don't, none, so the nuns, kind of is sort of a, an object lesson for them. Oh, this is how the Christians act, because, you know, they supported this guy and he's saying all these hateful things, and this is what Christianity is really about, and so I'm a nun, and this is another reason why I'm a, you know, so a nun, like no religion. So it'll be interesting to see the effect on the church.
And again, the evangelicals all along have been very clear about their dislike. I heard a very important evangelical leader, perhaps a pastor or something like that, who speaks for a whole lot of them. And they said, how could you people, the evangelical churches, make such a push for Donald Trump? I mean, the, what the man says about all these anti-gospel values. And he says, well, let me put it this way in just two succinct words, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. All along, they've had her pegged as somebody, and this.
But you said the court, right. You know, and abortion issues.
I don't know about the diocese here, but in Patterson Diocese and a lot of the Catholic churches, everything, you know, in the newsletters and whatever, it was all comparing, not, you know, the parties, Republican platform to Democrat, and it was a huge push to vote Republican.
Right.
You know, and yeah, but.
So look what we were stuck with as a choice.
I know, that's the problem.
Personally, anyway, I went into the voting booth once and said, they should have hand sanitizer. One of these people is going to be president.
That's true.
What was good at one parish is the pastor proceeded to write a very thoughtful explanation of Hillary Clinton's positions and her pros and her cons and why it was difficult for him as a priest, but finally as a Catholic, he had to pick Hillary Clinton. Opposing that page was the associate pastor's thing, which was exactly the opposite. He went through, again, pointing out many of the things, but he says, for this reason, I will be voting for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And they kind of, and I think that really is a good way to say exactly what you said, namely, we're stuck with one of the two, and that's life.
Yeah.
Not like it was in San Diego, the parish had an insert saying if you vote Democrat, you're going to hell.
Or had the priest who had like the aborted baby.
Oh my gosh.
What was that? I didn't
know. A priest had like an aborted baby.
Do you know Priest for Life, Frank Pavone? I don't know how he had an actual fetus
that
had been aborted on a. No, I mean, it was really horrible.
It's like illegal.
But you know what else was horrible? Have you seen this on Facebook that. You know, they have these different posts, and I think I'm told myself against abortion, but I thought this was horrible.
There's
people
like
are putting something about Hillary, like now she knows what a late-term abortion feels like.
Oh,
well,
and I think that's very offensive to say. I'm sorry, even though I'm against it.
But for her to even see, for me, for her to even consider that, I mean, we as a culture to even. I can't even think of it.
Yeah.
It's like,
I know, it's
this
so
complicated. But I think the other thing, you have to acknowledge what led to this. I mean, because I think it goes back to the last so many years of And it's not who's president, the Congress. Hardly anything has been done for like years, and I think people are really afraid. You look at Social Security, Medicare, and like legitimately, I think people are afraid. Like, we just can't keep going on where nothing is decided, nothing is. So that's what
that
led to
part
this.
Of it, yeah,
yeah,
too.
You know?
By the way, about the protesters, somebody pointed out something. You know, it's good if you realize, and at 70 years old, I finally realized I can still learn stuff. I says, well, I'm a little dismayed with these protesters because what are they protesting? I said, there was an election. What do they want to do over?
Right.
And he says, what about the big protest? I said, what are you talking about? The one that was really big. I said, what are you talking about? Well, he says, we're a whole section of the country in 1861 and because of President Lincoln was actually took half, five or six, they went out of the town. And I said, they started the Civil War. And I said, yeah, this ain't as bad as that. You're right.
If the division was more regional, I would think that's a possibility.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's mixed in.
Well, I heard California wants to become their own country.
Right.
Yeah, and South Jersey wants to see South New Jersey grow up.
But you know, hopefully this is all in our hands. Hopefully it's in God's hands. Hopefully he's holding on to this and he's gonna do whatever.
Yeah.
You know? That's the thing.
He's got a good track record.
Yeah.
But I know, but like the whole election, I see a change. Like I think somewhat it's based on age too, because the people that were going for Bernie Sanders, like I think in the future our country is very much gonna
going
go socialistic.
Way.
Like it didn't make it this time. But as the next group gets older and more people are in that age group, because I found that interesting too. Like, do I want a government where, you know, my college is paid for everything? But then, like, for a lot of people older, we said, well, who's going to pay for it all?
Right.
But I didn't find the younger group thinking like that. When I talked to younger people,
totally
it was like this kind of, to me, like a magical thinking, like, I'm going to get free college.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. But who's actually going to be the worker paying for it?
Yeah.
And what are their taxes going to be, like 95%?
Right. Oh, yeah.
But it was like that kind of thinking. I found like
a lot
of magical thinking on people's parts. But I think our country is going to go socialistic in a little while.
Another pendulum. Yeah, exactly. But it'll take a couple generations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the age divide?
I definitely
think,
for sure. Yeah, I think you saw that in the voting, too.
Yeah.
So what if Father have up his sleeve?
So what I have up my sleeve is a way to sort of end this discussion. We have to take this station break. Still waiting for my publisher to wake up and ask to see the manuscript of my Book of Easter Reflections. Mm. We've done Advent, Christmas, and Lent.
Right.
So they're still making me read. Anyway. This is a reflection in the book that, in the manuscript. It's not a book until somebody publishes it. In the manuscript, for each of the 50 days of the Easter season, I'll take one of the two readings from the lectionary and give a quotation from that and make that sort of at least the spiritual jumping off point. This is from Saturday, the fourth week of Easter. Paul and Barnabas spoke out fearlessly. This is from Acts 13. Paul and Barnabas spoke out fearlessly. For thus we were instructed by the Lord, I have made you a light to the nations, a means of salvation to the ends of the earth. End quotation. I'm celebrating Mass for six of Mother Teresa's missionaries of charity in their tiny chapel in Newark. As I listen to the reading from Acts, I hear the words, I have made you a light to the nations, a means of salvation to the ends of the earth. I look at the little community made up of women from around the world, India, Brazil, the US, Costa Rica, and so on. And I think to myself that the nations are well represented here. My mind wanders to an experience I had a few summers ago. I'm sitting at a table in the parking lot of the Iberia restaurant. In the warm July sun. With school on summer break, I've walked down the hill from the monastery in time to claim a table to watch the 10 a.m. game be broadcast on a Spanish cable channel. For the price of a cup of coffee, I get to watch the World Cup match between France and Mexico on the television screen mounted above the open-air bar. York's multi-ethnic, iron-bound neighborhood, the World Cup stirs up passionate emotions that sometimes show themselves in shouting, hooting, and loud groaning directed at the... In North's multi-ethnic, iron-bound neighborhood, the World Cup stirs up passionate emotions that sometimes show themselves in shouting, hooting, and loud groaning directed at the television screen. So besides watching the game, I'm also watching the people around me. The men and women at the next table, dressed in Mexico's green, white, and red, are quietly focused on the figures on the television screen. As I sit here surrounded by green, white, and red flags and soccer shirts and the sounds of different languages, I feel myself part of a single group of soccer fans around the world watching this game or listening to it on the radio. Each group is rooting for its own team, certainly, but more importantly, they're all united by a common passion for soccer. I drag my chair into the shade of the big umbrella that sprouts from the center of my round table, careful not to jostle my coffee cup, as waiters keep bustling back and forth with orders of coffee, juice, and rolls. As I sit down again, cries of dismay burst from the nearby tables. The French have just scored. One or two men shout, but most of the Mexican fans simply stare at the screen, silent and sullen. Having spent many pleasant months in France, I'm rooting for the French. But I keep my mouth shut, both because it seems inappropriate to cheer under the circumstances, and out of respect for several men dressed in kitchen whites, and who I suspect are Mexicans by the way they've been standing behind the bar, their eyes riveted to the television. The manager seems to turn a blind eye to their slacking on the job. It is the Copa Mundial, after all. People all around the world are watching this game. As the soccer game continues, I find myself enjoying the good-natured cheering and banner waving of the Mexican fans sitting at the next table. Mexico misses a corner kick, and all my Mexican brothers and sisters groan. Without thinking, I groan along with them. Looking at the other people in the parking lot wearing their nation's colors, I suddenly sense my oneness with close to 1 billion brothers and sisters around the world. The chanting of the Alleluias before the gospel reading brings me back to the little chapel, and the sisters and I continue Mass as usual. I don't think anymore about the World Cup until it comes to the Lord's Prayer, and I find myself pronouncing the first word with special care and meaning, Our Father. As I hear the various accents of the sisters praying, I reflect that the word our is a pretty demanding concept. It is not the we of us against them that you find at a soccer game, but a we that proclaims our belief that all of us are children of the same loving Father. When I use we that way, I'm forced to break out of my closed little circle of self and realize that the only way I can truly pray with Christ is as a member of the great we of his kingdom, where there are no walls and no divisions. It is easy to feel that the we gathered around the altar extends far beyond the walls of the convent in a poor neighborhood in our city and out past the boundaries of city, state, country to embrace everyone in the world. I say a quick prayer that my own words and actions will hasten the day when the fullness of the kingdom will come, and all divisions will cease, and everyone will live in peace, the peace